The great secret of the successful fool, of course, is that he is no fool at all. That was a quote by Isaac Asimov. And he was referring specifically to the fools that William Shakespeare used to employ in his plays. But I'm using the quote in reference to something I've been thinking about lately from America One, which was back when Michelle Wolf hosted the White House, or not hosted, she performed at the White House Correspondents Association dinner. I'm not sure the official title of that event. But back in 2018, Michelle Wolf, a comedian, I wasn't close friends with her, but I did know her from many interactions and working together over the years. Lovely person. She went out into one of the most stressful situations I could possibly imagine. Going into a room full of journalists, politicians. Donald Trump wasn't there because, as we know, he was a great coward and would never face anyone joking about him like that. Instead, he sent his henchwoman, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, to kind of be his proxy. And I guess the appropriate term in this case would be whipping boy, except she was a girl, but whipping girl. In that Sarah Huckabee Sanders was there to take the beating on behalf of Donald Trump. Now, again, as I was saying, can't imagine something more terrifying. Going out there in that audience as a comedian and trying to make people laugh. At the time, Adam Conover wrote a wonderful op-ed in the New York Times where he said, you know, that at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, that it isn't the job of the comedian necessarily to make the people laugh that are in the room, but it's more important that your audience is the people at home who are watching. The people, literally the people. Because your job in that moment is to speak power to truth, truth to power. I might be mixing that up. Either way, you want to be punching up, exposing the truth in a funny way, and tearing them apart. I mean, it's meant to be a roast. It's always been that way when a comedian has come out. Michelle Wolf isn't the first person who came out there and skewered these people. Seth Meyers mocked Nancy Pelosi's face in a very hilarious way. If you recall, Seth Meyers mocked Nancy Pelosi for like having a frozen face, like Botox or whatever. And there's a picture afterwards of Nancy Pelosi squeezing Seth Meyers' cheek and laughing about it. She was a good sport about it, okay? So the reason I say this is because if you recall at the time, people were flipping out saying that Michelle Wolf was super offensive and rude, a horrid woman. How dare she make fun of a wife and mother? Sarah Huckabee Sanders took it with grace. The beating, you know, and it's just like all these journalists, liberal journalists, were like falling over themselves to defend Sarah Huckabee Sanders and kind of attacking Michelle for, you know, they were kind of acting like this event was some sort of sacred space where we reward the great honor of journalism and the White House, you know, press corps and, you know, really, I never thought it was that. I thought it was a chance for a comedian to get up there and make fun of them to their faces. I mean, that's what it was. Now, I guess Michelle, being a woman, being relatively unknown, really struck people. And given the climate at the time, you know, I just don't know if I mean, and I would say this about liberals, too, at the time. Everybody was super sensitive at that point. Everybody was prickly as fuck. I mean, just any little thing would hurt your feelings, okay? I'm included in this. But in reality, what Michelle was doing was speaking the truth. Now, whatever side of politics you happened to be on, you can't deny that Sarah Huckabee Sanders outright lies for her boss. I mean, there was just no question. So the joke that people were freaking out about was that Michelle Wolf said, something along the lines of, you know, I actually like Sarah Sanders. I think that she's very resourceful. She uses the ashes from the lies that she burns or the truth that she burns to create that perfect smoky eye. That's a fucking great joke on many levels. And that's why this quote, you know, the great secret of the successful fool is that he's no fool at all. Michelle wasn't a fool. She knew exactly what she was doing in that moment, which was, one, people were like, you made fun of her face. You made fun of her looks. No, she didn't. She complimented her makeup as a way in to criticize her character, which is brilliant. And not only that, but the metaphor of makeup in it, fucking great. Fucking great. Metaphor of makeup, because makeup, what is the point of makeup? The point of makeup is to hide, obscure, enhance, however you want to call it. It's meant to distort the truth. Makeup is a lie in a way. And she was using that as a metaphor, which is brilliant. Also, no man could have gotten away with a joke like that. One, because it would have felt sort of punching down. Like, you never want to hear a man making fun of a woman's makeup, even though you can. It just isn't as powerful. And Michelle came at her like, you know, because that's how women insult each other. They go for like, you know, they kind of start with a compliment, but really it's just a searing critique of who you are and the bad choices you made. I mean, it was just, whoo, so delicious. Loved it. So many great, and that wasn't even the other jokes were even better than that one. That was the one that people were freaking out about. She also compared Sarah Huckabee Sanders to Aunt Lydia on Handmaid's Tale, which, again, people are going, saying she's being made fun of her looks, which, by the way, people are saying that, okay, this is the part that drives me crazy. They're saying that by comparing Sarah Sanders to Aunt Lydia, it's insulting her looks. So what are you saying? The actress who plays Aunt Lydia is hideous and Sarah is too? I mean, what? No. The joke was about how Aunt Lydia is essentially an Uncle Tom for white women, which was kind of how Michelle ended up describing it, which is Aunt Lydia in that show and in that book is someone who betrays her fellow women, oppresses them, is violent towards them, and she was making a brilliant comparison. Anyway, truly, it was one of those days on Twitter that was just it was fun because it was like watching people self-destruct over it and then watching all the comedians rally around to protect one of their own. And that is something like, and I have no, I want to preface this by saying I had no personal issues with Michelle Wolf. But what I've noticed is that, you know, behind the scenes, comedians can be very petty and make fun of each other. And again, not speaking about Michelle Wolf in particular, she's fine. She was fine. But I'm just saying that comedians can be petty, can be jealous of each other's success, can say, I didn't really think it was that funny. But publicly facing, comedians are usually very tribal and will defend each other. Now, there are a few examples, because there are comedians who are sort of shitty to other comics, and then, you know, it's sort of like, okay, you're out now, and now we aren't going to defend you anymore. So I don't want to say that as a rule. But I will say it was fun to see the comedy community join together to be like, fuck all y'all, take a joke. Why did you even invite her to begin with if you didn't know what she was about? You know, and, you know, the first thing I said to my boyfriend that morning when I woke up and read all the press coverage and the reaction and everything about it is I said, I'm excited because Michelle just got made. Like, she just made it, you know, and she obviously had a lot of success prior to that point, you know, Netflix special, The Daily Show. So things definitely didn't happen overnight for her, because that's not really how it works in comedy. Because anyone who says, oh, that person was an overnight success, that's not true. You know, because comedy in general is so hard to be good at that it takes over a decade. And so she's been in the game for a really long time. She's done great work and she's been building and building and building. But this was a moment, a turning point for her where she's now in the, now every single American pretty much knows her name. Like, that's phenomenal. I was like just smiling like, yes, go Michelle, go. Like, ugh. Now, you know, at the same time, my boyfriend's first response to that was, I really hope she has bodyguards, because there are probably a lot of morons out there who are sending her death threats, which I really hope that's not the case. But given how things had been at that point, I wouldn't have been surprised. But anyway, great moment for Michelle, terrible moment for the press, because here's the thing, and this is another Shakespeare reference, that old quote from Hamlet, King of Denmark, the lady doth protest too much, methinks. And that phrase in specifically in Hamlet was referring to Queen Gertrude, who was watching a play about the murder of Hamlet's uncle. And she's basically saying, you know, I think she's questioning the sincerity of the actress, but in a way she was revealing her own fear of what was being revealed in the play. My point is, the press did protest too much, methinks. They got really mad about this Sarah Huckabee Sanders stuff, but in reality, what they were probably mad about was the other joke that Michelle made about them, which was essentially Michelle saying, all y'all have made profit and succeeded and gotten additional success off of Donald Trump. And she kind of called out their sycophantic sort of, you know, especially in the lead up to the election, they gave him so much airtime, so much attention, and he's good for clicks, you know, he's good for views and ratings. And there's a little bit of an ethical question when it comes to that, when, especially when they're in these press conferences with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Why aren't they more aggressively saying to her, hey, bitch, why are you lying? Why are you lying to us? You know, and there was a point where it felt like the press wasn't holding the feet to the fire enough. And Michelle called them out on that. And I think deep down, that's what they were upset about. Now, of course, right after that, the White House Correspondents Association put out a press release, which, my God, talk about methinks the lady doth protest too much, methinks. Which is also similar to something called the Streisand effect, which, if you don't know what that is, the Streisand effect is when somebody ends up calling more attention to something by saying, don't pay attention to this. So it started because Barbara Streisand made a huge fucking stink about pictures being published of her Malibu, like, seaside estate. And all it did was make people want to see more pictures of it. And everyone was like, holy shit. Like, she basically gave press to her own house when she made this big stink about it. So in a way, the press was kind of doing the Streisand effect when they were, when the White House Correspondents Association put out this, like, apology letter. They didn't even refer to Michelle by name. They were like, we apologize for the entertainer. They called her the entertainer. Oh, it's so funny. Anyway, they sort of brought more attention to it, made it a bigger deal, and they honestly look like a bunch of cowards, in my opinion. It's like, you can't take a fucking joke. Also, do I need to mention the crowd of the people who are like, fuck your feelings, man. You can't take a joke. Donald Trump was just joking about Mexicans being rapists. He was just joking about grabbing women's pussies. He was just joking about banning trans people from the military. It's like, no, those aren't jokes. Those are policies. Anyway, so I'm rambling here because it's just too much in my mind. But they put out this letter, and they basically suggested that maybe they were going to reconsider even doing the dinner anymore, which is hilarious that a female comic got up there and was too raw for them, too truthful, that they couldn't fucking handle it, and now they were going to consider canceling it. Now, as we know, they didn't cancel it, and ultimately, and this is right around the time that everything, the shit was really hitting the fan and we were about to head on into America 2, and it was ended up being the last White House Correspondents' Dinner in which they decided once and for all to try and make it fair. So they pitted a liberal comedian and a conservative comedian, which was a really, really stupid idea, because just putting two comedians up from two opposing sides is really weird, because comedy, in my mind, yes, you can have a liberal point of view as a comedian. You can have a conservative point of view as a comedian. But the very skilled comedians kind of transcend political party, especially if they're saying the truth. Now, for people who don't have a sense of humor and are too sensitive, they may not be able to hear jokes and think jokes are funny about something that's different than what they believe. Or they might fall into the category of, as Dave Chappelle said one time in his in one of his specials, that everything is funny until it happens to you. Now, those are the situations in which you may not find a comedian funny. And obviously there's taste levels, comedy is subjective, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think comedy itself is necessarily one political party or another. But I do think in general at that time, liberal comedians were funnier in that they were in a position of punching up and pointing out injustice in a really funny way. That's like really rewarding comedy, and it's really funny when it hits right. Like, for instance, when I would see a black comedian perform and they would make fun of white people, it was truly one of my favorite types of comedy because I want to be made fun of as a white person. I think it's really funny. And that's me having a sense of humor about myself. And I think it's really great to see someone who's in a societal lower position, if you will, racially speaking, someone who is the victim of oppression, making fun of the oppressor. I love that. I think that's funny. And as a white person, I would enjoy those jokes. It doesn't quite hit as hard coming from a white person, even though I still loved when white people would make fun of fellow white people. That really worked. But it doesn't quite work the other way around, where like if a white person tries to make fun of black people on stage, that does not go over well. It just doesn't work. You got to punch up. Anyway, again, I'm rambling here. Of course, what I was saying was the White House Correspondents' Dinner ended up coming to an end because they pitted a liberal comedian against a conservative comedian. Now, of course, the conservative comedian that year, as we all know, was Governor Mike Huckabee. As we know, burgeoning stand-up comic, his tweets truly hilarious. I actually I brought one of Governor Mike Huckabee's best jokes with me to America, too, because I never wanted to forget his genius as a comedian. Here's an example of one of his jokes. Poop Dog has nephew named Bow Wow. Both bad dogs who advocate murder and sex slavery for POTUS and First Lady. Who let the dogs out? I mean, have you ever heard such comedic brilliance? What the fuck? So anyway, they brought... Truly, I honestly, just to go back for a second, sometimes I would look at Mike Huckabee's Twitter and be like, is this actually not Mike Huckabee? It's just some like millennial kid in his parents' basement doing a weird Twitter account. You know, weird Twitter. Weird Twitter was like e-horse books and like weird, like a carrot who's like talking about his dead son. Like that was like weird Twitter. Just weird accounts that were high concept and didn't make any sense. And then each tweet would get like 300,000 faves or something. That's whenever I looked at Mike Huckabee's Twitter, I'd be like, is this real? How can this be real? Anyway, so the White House Correspondents Association is trying to ultimately solve, you know, the years and years of brutal, mean, liberal comedy that happened at these things. They ended up bringing in a conservative voice to try and balance it out. Of course, they booked Governor Mike Huckabee, the preeminent conservative comedian. And he came in, and it was so bad that it ended up in a brawl. And a couple people were stabbed, and it just was too much because now not only is it terrible for a real bona fide comedian, a liberal comedian, and again, just because you're a comedian doesn't mean you're liberal, but in that time period, liberal comedians were generally, I thought, funnier because they were in a position of punching up. Point being, if you think it's bad to sit there and be berated with harsh jokes from a liberal-leaning comedian, now imagine watching a conservative comedian who's supposed to be on your team get up and utterly fail. I mean, it hurts. It hurts real bad, and people couldn't take it, and they started ripping off their bow ties, screaming stuff, and just stabbing each other, and it was horrible. So we ended the White House Correspondents' Dinner after that, and that's when Melania Trump, who was, of course, retired at this time, she actually started her own foundation. Just to prove that she actually was anti-bullying, after all, she started her own foundation. It was called Healing from Those Mean Comedians Initiative. And the Healing from Those Mean Comedians Initiative was not very successful because people just ultimately felt embarrassed if they had to show up to one of the centers that she set up. She set up a few different Healing from Mean Comedians Initiative centers around the country, and people were just super embarrassed. Like, if you were gonna go, you had to basically put on some kind of, like, you had to put on a full chicken suit or something to get in, because you didn't want anyone to see that it was you who had been hurt by the mean comedian and that you needed healing. Anyway, of course, that's all water under the bridge at this time. You know, those were wild times, surreal times. And I remember at the time feeling like the center could not hold, you know, that just everything was about to, you could tell everything was about to split wide open. You know, we were so divided. You know, I was around that same time I got into a fight with a conservative woman on Twitter, this same woman that I kind of would follow, you know, her writings and her opinions. And I ended up getting into a fight with her, because she would just, and this is what I found a lot of times with people at that time, people on the conservative side of things, still completely acceptable to gratuitously mock transgender people. And this thing, I never got it. I'd be like, what is it that you gain from this? You know, they would look for any opportunity to bring it back to, let me mock trans people. And I just could never grasp why that was something that mattered to them so much, why they were so threatened by a relatively small portion of the population who are just trying to live their goddamn lives. I mean, truly, like, do some fucking reading, you know, read about it. But no, science, DNA is stubborn. That old DNA, you're a fake woman. You're not a real, like, just all this hateful speech. And, like, they think that somehow, they thought that somehow that was okay. It was just how people used to talk about gay people. It's like, this isn't going to end well for you. We're already moving in a direction of awareness about this stuff and scientific knowledge about it. You know, there was one thing that people would always say back then, which was transgenderism is a mental illness. It's a mental disorder. And it's like, okay, well, then why isn't it in the book of mental disorders? Like, it was never listed in there. It's like, they're just so sure of everything. Anyway, so I got in a fight with this woman. I was like, what do you gain from this? What do you get out of gratuitously mocking transgender people? And she did not like that I asked her that and got very defensive and was like, you know, I'm not mocking them. I'm just stating biological fact. And I'm just like, oh my God, do some basic level of research before you say stuff like that. You know, and I maintained my calmness. I talked to her with respect. And she almost immediately resorted to insults. First off, which is, hey everyone, Sarah's a comedian. And it's like, hey, comedians can talk sincerely on social media. Like, I don't have to constantly be telling jokes in order to be a comedian. Like, so first of all, that's the hackiest fucking joke of all time. Like I've never been told that before on Twitter by a Trump supporter. Oh, you're a comedian. Yeah, right. You're not making me laugh right now. At least not in the way you're supposed to, you know, whatever. So anyway, she's not a Trump supporter, but she's a conservative. And she resorted to that. Then she starts calling me an imbecile and a fool and bringing the argument over from trans issues to abortion, because obviously those two things are related, because in her mind, DNA is so sacred. DNA is who you are. It's the map of who you are. DNA is unique. DNA is implanted the moment the sperm hits the egg. Unique DNA is created. Therefore, you are a full human life. And you're male or female, bitch. Which is like, you're not even accounting for intersex people. DNA is not that stubborn. We also didn't know at the time if DNA determined gender. They actually hadn't even figured it out yet, yet you are so confident. Anyway, all those things are complex arguments and have their own trappings. But for someone to be so 100% confident in science that they think they know, you know, that they have all the answers is ludicrous. Because for one thing, science evolves and changes. And for science to be so rigid is for you to not understand what science is. You know, science has to constantly be checking itself, peer reviewed. And when they find out that something was wrong, they have to correct the course. And so for someone to be so rigid, which I shouldn't have been surprised, because she's also someone who takes the Bible literally. And people who take the Bible literally, first of all, it's impossible to take the Bible literally because it contradicts itself so much. So you can't possibly take it literally, or you wouldn't be able to live in the modern world at all. And it makes no sense. It's the rigid thinking that I can't deal with. Anyway, so we got into a little bit of a tiff. And I was a little embarrassed about it because I was being really sincere. Whenever I was super sincere on Twitter and like vulnerable like that, I would always be worried that somebody in the comedy community would be reading it and going, God, Sarah is such a fucking stick in the mud. You know, and maybe I am. And maybe that's why I'm here in a cabin alone now, is because I'm not funny enough for the comedians and I'm not funny enough for the conservatives, because apparently I'm not a comedian if I don't agree with you politically. Like, that's how comedy works. And I'm not, I don't know. Anyway, the feeling that I would have at that time was just that things were just going to split at any moment. And I was spending way too much time worrying about all these things and thinking about all these things. There was a little bit of a creative block at the time where I was always imagining an imaginary. I was responding to an imaginary gatekeeper in every step of my work. I would imagine, oh, if someone, like I just said, if someone reads this tweet, are they going to not think I'm funny enough to work at their TV show? If someone reads this tweet and thinks it's not funny, will they not buy a ticket to my show? If someone doesn't like the thing I'm working on right now, the writing I'm doing, will they not give me more work? Will they not green light the series? Whatever it is I was working on. You know, these were things that were kind of blocking me creatively, because I got to a point in my career where it felt like I had, the stakes were higher and I had too many things on the line and I knew too much about how the business worked. And so whereas earlier in my comedy career, there was a purity to what I was doing because my sole goal was just to make an audience of 10 people laugh. Of just trying to come up, and that was his own kind of struggle. That was painful in its own way of just, can I think of anything funny? God, I'm not funny yet. I don't know how to be funny. How do I create this? How do I churn out material? I have to wait for inspiration and it feels like it will never come again. I don't have any work ethic. I don't know how to do it. That was a struggle in itself. But it was very pure in that all I was trying to think of was something that would make an audience laugh. Whereas then it became later, so many projects I would work on would never see the fucking light of day. And so it wasn't about the audience anymore, it felt like. It felt like it was about selling the idea, convincing someone to buy me and my brand and my voice. And the word brand wasn't even a fucking thing 10 years ago. So anyway, just frustrated, you know, and I'm so glad that that's gone now, because now I just talk into this microphone and literally nobody cares. I mean, very few people. In fact, if the podcast had come out in America One, I don't know if it would have been considered successful. But total freedom. This is where I have total freedom. And maybe that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not sure. But, you know, Of course, if more people reviewed it and left 5-star reviews and tweeted about it, I'm sure that more people would have listened to it if this had come out in America One, of course. But, you know, that's all, you know, you can't go back in time. And now I just get to speak into a void and nothing can go wrong. I used to be someone who hated the idea of roasts. And only because they felt too mean and I was too sensitive to handle it. Now that might mean that I would have been somebody who needed to go to one of the Healing from Those Mean Comedians initiative centers. But that's not true, actually, because I just wouldn't put myself in a situation where I was being roasted if I didn't have to be. Roasting to me is just, it was just too mean. I was too sensitive. I wouldn't even like to watch them. I would more read them. I like to read them because it softens the blow a little. And they're not even about me. I just would read it and be like, oh, God, that feels very painful and very personal. But roasting is an art form that I respect. And I don't think, you know, and sometimes you don't like something because you know you're not good at it. Or, yeah, and I definitely was never someone who was like skilled at roast jokes, you know. But I also never really tried because I think I was too afraid that when I dished out my searing heat on that stage that I wouldn't be able to take what was coming back my way, which that's truly for me what it was about roasts, is I didn't want to hear anybody pick on my most vulnerable parts of myself, which sometimes roast, you know, a good roast joke is specific. It's about the person, specific things about them that everyone in the room gets, and that's the best kind of roast joke. Like if you know something specific about somebody's personality or their career, and making fun of that in a room of other people who get the reference is really great. But sometimes in roast situations, I think people don't know each other that well. The audience may not know everyone that well, so you can't get it as specific. So you have to resort to really lowest common denominator type insults. And of course, those types of insults against women are always about how they're sluts, they're old, they're fat, you know, that kind of shit. Don't like that. I don't even know why I brought that up. But I was just thinking about it because everyone kept talking about when the Michelle Wolf thing happened about this is what a roast is. You know, she was roasting that audience. And I think roasts can be very powerful in, like, for instance, in that situation. Or they can be just like gratuitous, sort of like, why are we even here insulting each other type situations. I think a good roast can be really cleansing, but a sort of pointless one where we're just here to exercise our meanest, you know, demons, that part I don't like about it. But I did get to do a show called Boast Rattle, which is where you get to get into a compliment competition with other comedians, which truly, this tells you how vulnerable I was, that I left the Boast Rattle feeling better than I have about myself in like 10 years. Like the compliments that were given to me may not have even been sincere, but they were so nice that I was just like, oh my God, like I never want this to end. These are like, because they were specific, like a good compliment is specific and it's true. I mean, I hope they were true, because if they weren't, I would die. I still think about those compliments. They were really good. And Adam Conover was the one that boasted me, and it was glorious. And I won. So that helped. I won the Boast Rattle, which really helped and made me feel good about myself. And that's just part of the thing about comedy. Sometimes you get lofty like I was earlier about what is the point of comedy. It is to speak truth to power. It is to, you know, hold the feet to the fire of those in power. It's about the emperor's new clothes, pointing out that he's naked, you know. Oh, comedy is art, all those things. But You know what another huge part of comedy is? Ego. Just basic run-of-the-mill ego. It's somebody who wants attention, and the way that they get attention is by making an audience laugh. That's a lot of the reason why people get into comedy, let's be honest. If you were truly an artist, you would become a poet. And you would be destitute. No. I'm just kidding. Poets are artists, but they've got ego too. Everybody's got a little ego mixed up in their shit. And I'll tell you one thing. Living alone in the woods helps you really come and bring that into focus, because you don't have anybody to bounce it off of anymore. And you're just sort of existing in the present. You know, you're surviving, you're in nature, you have to totally rearrange your brain. You know, I used to be really concerned with what people thought of me, and I would, and that's difficult to admit, because you don't want to admit you care about what people think of you. That's something that seems weak and sort of embarrassing. Like, oh, you know, a compliment, especially about women, that was very popular in America One was, she doesn't give a shit about what people think of her. She just doesn't even care. And it's like, first of all, you're lying. Everyone gives a shit a little bit about what other people think of them. We are social beings, and how you know, especially somebody in the entertainment business, especially someone who aggressively becomes famous very quickly, like to become famous very quickly takes a certain level of ambition that is aggressive. Like, you are doing things to get famous, not necessarily to be, you know, just creating my art, you know. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be famous. That's totally legit. It's a great thing to happen. It has its downfalls, but it also affords you an enormous amount of comfort and opportunity in America. So someone who is like, she just doesn't give a shit about what people think of her. Like, first of all, yes, she does, because someone, I know you're like, who are you talking about? It really could be anyone, but I'm just saying, it's sort of this trope that you hear a lot about female comics, female actresses, female figures of any kind. Like, she's just someone who truly is confident and accepts herself. And it's kind of like, okay, well, I'm sure that is true to a degree, but someone who is constantly putting themselves in the public eye does care about what people think of them. And they've manipulated, I don't want to say manipulate, they have gotten very good at, you know, using the spotlight. And to be loved in the spotlight, you have to, you know, be someone who can make an audience laugh, can keep an audience paying attention if you're a great actress, you know, whatever the different thing is that you're trying to be, great singer, whatever. My point is that don't you dare fucking judge me for caring about what people think of me. But at times it would be destructive. I think a little bit of caring about what people think of you is healthy. You know, you don't want to smell like an onion. Bathe yourself, you animal. You know, basic level of social skills is needed in life. But I would sometimes get too obsessed with it, where I'd be like looking at Instagram and be like, why the fuck wasn't I invited to this fucking party? Oh, well, it's because they fucking hate me. And now I'm imagining the conversation in which they're all talking about how much they fucking hate me. And that would be too much, you know. And also this imaginary gatekeeper I'm referring to would be also an example of how I would care too much about what people thought of me and try to be predicting, what is it that they want from me? What is it that they need me to do? How can I please this person? And at the end of the day, what's needed is for me to just be myself. And what is needed is for me to just express myself in a very pure way. But you got to remove all those blocks, and you got to do kind of a little bit of dragon blood, as Kanye would put it. Of course, we ended up finding out after all that Kanye stuff about Trump, and then he puts out this song where he's like, poop de scoop, de poop de scoop. Like, truly, I heard that song and I was like, oh, we are being trolled. This person is straight up fucking with us. And of course, then we did find out that, of course, Kanye was fucking with all of us. And it was just a really long, long con for this. You know, they used to have prank TV shows. He did a prank miniseries. It was like a 12-part miniseries over the course of 10 years where it was a long-term prank that Kanye West pulled on everyone. And people were like, wow, he truly is an artist. And that was when we knew Kanye did have dragon blood pulsing through his veins. I mean, it didn't help that along the way he helped Trump forward very destructive policies against minorities and people of color and immigrants. You know, it didn't help that he was doing that. But at the end of the day, we were like, oh, shit, he is really good at art. So we kind of let him get away with it. Anyway, this one might have been a fucking mess. I mean, they all are. But you know what? I'm not going to worry about it because there is no gatekeeper anymore. I am the gatekeeper. I am the one holding myself back. I am the one putting myself into the sunken place. Boopty scoopty. Boopty scoop. Scoopity poop. See, it works. Bye.